matters, item 3A, surfboard election results and swear in of elected representatives. I think Mark and I are honored to have been returned to the positions as trustees, and I'm sure we'll do the best we can to represent the fund in its best interests.
So who's going to swear them in, Leanna? Do you have someone?
I have never done this before. I don't know.
I'm happy to do it if you want.
The mayor can swear them in.
Okay. And the duties of trustee of the SURF Fund, is that an accurate description of what you are being sworn in as?
As trustees of the SURF Fund.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Is there an issue, Carolyn, with us doing them together?
No. Let's do them together.
Okay. So it's Mark Petrosimone and Jerry Segnella. Can you repeat after me, Mark and Jerry, and raise your right hand? I, Jerry Segnella, or Mark Petrosimone.
Hi, Jerry Segnella.
Mark, you're on mute.
I, Mark Petrosimone.
Solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear.
Solemnly swear
that I will faithfully and impartially perform the duties of trustee for the SURF Fund to the best of my ability and according to law
Best of my ability and according to law.
And that I will at all times strive.
And that I will at all times strive.
And I will at all times strive.
To use the power entrusted to me.
To use the power entrusted to me.
To use the power entrusted in me.
As such officer.
As such officer.
As such officer.
For the best interests of the city.
For the best interests of the city.
For the best interests of the city.
So help me God.
Congratulations.
Thank you. All right, I think that there's a presentation to be made, Carolyn.
Yes, I believe so.
Derek might be able to introduce them. Let me just join them into the Zoom call.
Sure.
Go ahead, Derek.
Sure. I just wanted to remind the trustees, we spoke last month about a current investment we have, Basis Investment Group. We've been with them for a few years. They've done a great job. They have a second fund offering slated, and they'd like some time to present. We talked about it a bit last month, and we have a lot of the senior, if not all of the senior representatives from Basis, which is it's very much an honor to have them all here to talk about their second fund offering as a follow-on investment. With that being said, Anissa, if you'd like to take over from here and introduce your team, and the floor is yours.
Well, good morning. And I'm actually Tammy Jones. I'm the CEO and founder. Hi, I'm Derek. And thank you all for giving us this opportunity this morning to present our Fund 2 to you. And I will introduce our team. My name is Tammy Jones, as I said, CEO and founder of Basis. Anissa Keith, who Derek referenced, is head of our investor relations group. And we also have, I'm trying to find them, Kunle Shayembo, who is our chief investment officer, and Rich Cadigan, who is our general counsel and chief compliance officer. So are we sharing the screen or does everyone have the presentation? Just wanted to...
We should probably share the screen, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. Great, we'll give Anissa a moment to get... Okay, perfect. So let's just start making sure I'm watching our time. Let's go to the first slide, please, Anissa. Perfect, thank you. So I wanna introduce you again to Basis. Basis Investment Group is a commercial real estate private equity credit platform that invests and lends across the capital stack with a specific focus in the middle market, with assets that and investments that are all collateralized by commercial real estate investments, and specifically the strategies that were in Fund One, where you are an investor, include mezzanine debt, preferred equity and structured equity, bridge debt, and B pieces. We have also added distressed debt to Fund Two, given what's going on in COVID, and we have a track record in that as well. A couple of comments about the platform. Well, I founded the company in the middle of the great financial crisis. I can't believe it's over, 12 years ago. And I'm proud to report that since then, we have deployed over $1.5 billion across 422 transactions, totaling about $4 billion in 47 states. So what's unique about investing with Basis? Well, first, we are one of the only African-American and female-led diversified commercial real estate investment platforms in the United States. And we have a significant commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion, which we'll talk about. Two, our team has invested together for over 20 years, our senior leadership team, which means that we are cycle tested. We have been through cycles well before COVID. And we'll talk a little bit about how our portfolio has been resilient to COVID and the reasons why. Me personally, I have invested and loaned on commercial real estate assets for pension funds and large institutions for my entire career, graduating from college. I can't even believe that. Starting with Equitable, investing the capital of the general account, IBM, CalPERS, and CalSTRS in equity strategies, and also going to work for GM's pension plan, investing their capital in the same strategies we're doing here at Basis, and then also working for a subsidiary of the Caisse de Dépôt, another pension fund, doing the exact same thing. And so there's a lot of institutional training on the team. And another unique aspect is that we all have debt and equity experience, which I think brings a different discipline to making these kind of investments, because it's all about the real estate. How are we going to invest and protect your capital? And how did we do it in Fund One? Well, we did three things. First, we created diversification across property type, across geography, again, in the middle market, across position in the capital stack, and real estate life cycle. So making sure that we have this diversified portfolio. And that really helped us in COVID, because we had a lot of workforce multifamily. We had very few hotels. And so portfolio allocation matters, and diversification is a risk mitigant. The second thing that we did, we promised you current income, and we delivered on that current income. We think that current income, and that was in the 11% range, which we think was, you know, exactly what we targeted, but also was a mitigant when you have volatility like we're experiencing today. And then finally, and this thesis still holds up really importantly in today's environment, to provide equity-like yields, but actually give you the downside protection of debt investments. And so we think it's a good complement to other things in the portfolio. Let's go to the next slide, please. I'm just going to call out a couple of quick things about our history. We executed on our plan to scale Basis. We started with raising capital back in 2009 and 10 by strategy, building the track record, making sure that we could execute in a commingled fund structure, which we did 3 years ago. And you'll see the fund is fully deployed. And we invested capital back in 2013 and 14 for investors like New York Common, New York City, Fortress Investment Group. And so each year we built our track record and wanted to ensure success by doing that first, managing that capital, and then going out and raising Fund One. And now we're back before this body to talk about Fund Two, which is going to do the same strategies. Let's go. I'm going to turn it over to Rich Cadigan.
Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to talk about two unique characteristics that Basis apart. First is our experience. Tammy mentioned the senior management team has worked together for the greater part of 20 years, and that's enabled us to establish a disciplined, consistent credit process. I'm also going to talk about our commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's not just who we look like, who we are, what we look like, but our diversity of thought and perspective. I'll also explain why that's important to you. First, on experience, Again, as Tammy mentioned, we've worked through multiple market cycles. What that means we know how to adjust to protect capital, and we know how to source quality investments in any market cycle, and a truer testament than our experience through COVID. The disciplined approach to credit. We have a commitment to our investment plan. And you'll see that through our track record and our the plan that we'll describe later. We mitigate risk to create a resilient portfolio. And that has all enabled us to deal with COVID, but also any other issues, and continue to deliver returns that outperform the market. Next slide, Anissa, please. Diversity, our commitment to diversity, our secret sauce. I want to talk about a couple of key statistics that the takeaways from this slide. First off, over 76% of our team is made up of minorities and women. We're also a certified minority women-owned business. Basis has also invested over $800 million with qualified MWAB CRE investors. Over 50% of our vendors are minority and women-owned businesses. We look for best-in-class partners with shared culture, and that alignment has created the portfolio and the returns that you see to date. Finally, we think this also speaks to the character of your partner. We want to be the change that we want to see. Thank you. Back to you, Tammy.
Thank you. Next slide, please. And so we think that diverse teams lead to better outcomes, and study after study supports that thesis. And we have a commitment to ESG. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this slide, but we have obviously been focused on the S. We actually have an ESG committee that's comprised of senior leaders at the firm. We have subcommittees, which every employee is involved with. We believe that environmental, social, and governance is not good for execution. It is execution. It makes sure that we are doing what needs to be done for our planet, for our people, and for our investors. And we believe it increases value and mitigates risk. Let's go to the next slide, please. Fund improvements, platform improvements. Since we last met with you, we executed on this plan as well. We said we were going to hire a controller. We did. We hired an HR director. We have enhanced our compliance function. We have a compliance consultant and an actual internal compliance team to make sure that transparency and governance is at the top, again, related to ESG. And we also hired additional acquisitions team members to actually help us find deals geographically. Let's go to the next slide, please. I'm not going to talk a lot. This is Fund One. We had 16 investors. We were oversubscribed. And just, again, the composition of the investors is, as stated, institutional, public, and a sovereign wealth fund and some family office capital. And just, I'm happy to say that every investor is going to re-up. And our first close is supposed to happen this week, actually. And our first close is going to be in the $400 million area, which is actually our first fund. So we're really blessed and grateful and excited about that. So we're working hard. And some of the larger investors came in to the first close. So hopefully that gives some comfort. That should happen this week. I can't believe that either. Next slide. Fund One is 100% deployed, exactly as we said, in terms of allocation across bridge, mezz, and preferred equity and B pieces. The portfolio has been resilient, as I mentioned. Of all, we have 23 direct investments and 2 B pieces, and so the portfolio has performed well, and we're really proud of that. And the main reason is because it's diversified. We had little exposure to hotels. We only had 3 hotels. They're all open. The retail that we had, again, everyone focuses on retail, was literally drug and grocery anchored community centers, which actually were super resilient in COVID. If you think about, and then a lot of our portfolio is workforce housing, multifamily. We know we have an affordability crisis in housing in America. So Basis is focused on investing in workforce housing on the debt and preferred equity side. And so those are the main reasons why our portfolio held up really well. And when you think about COVID, you think about food and shelter. And so, multifamily and, drug and grocery anchored retail centers actually are doing well. Next slide. I want to be mindful of the time. I've said all of this. We've delivered as promised in Fund One across all of the things that we talked about. And I want to give it to Kun Lee to talk about Fund Two's opportunity.
Right. Good morning, everyone. Yeah, on two, it's going to be a follow-on fund in terms of the strategies that we're going to be investing into fund one. Similar strategies, inclusive of mezzanine investment and preferred equity, bridge, BPCs. We are adding one strategy for fund two that wasn't in fund one. That's the shred debt, opportunistically looking to do that, given that we're coming out of COVID. We will fund acquisition, refinancing, and recapitalization, just as we did for fund one. Target size is 5 million to 50 million, you know, focus in the middle market segment, with you know, emphasis on current income. Tammy talked about that for fund one. We're going to do the same thing for fund two. Investment time will generally be 5 to 10 year fixed and floating investment. We are, you know, targeting returns in the 12 to 14% area, and you know, cash on cash, just as we did for fund one, we will be looking to emphasize cash on cash. We're targeting 8 to 10%. The fund, you know, our target is about 550 million. We have a hard cap of 750 million for the fund. Tammy already said that we have $410 million in first close commitment already. Next slide. This is, you know, our plan. As we've always said, you know, diversification is a big part of our success, you know, and that's how we've been able to be successful in Fund 1, even across the years of our basis existence. We've always focused on diversification. We are going to continue that focus for Fund 2, diversifying across strategies. As you can see on this chart, the gold shaded portion shows the strategies that we're going to be focused on, both senior and you know, men's and pref, structured equity, core, value add, opportunistics. Returns will vary for the strategies, you know, in general, ranging from 10 to 16% across all the strategies. I think, yeah, next slide.
And so what is the opportunity set? Take you through a few quick highlights. There is a lot of debt that's maturing in the next 3 years to the tune of $1.3 trillion. And so the fund too will take advantage of the ability to provide gap equity. Transactions volume pre-COVID was about, you know, 500 billion a year, and it's starting to ramp up because of COVID. There's been such, there's a lot of capital, I should say, on the sidelines, and there is a drive to get that capital back out. And so we are going to be participating in a less risky place in the capital stack, which we think is defensive positioning for portfolios. There's been volatility in the capital markets and the stock market, I think today, Dow, at least when I last looked, futures were down. So taking advantage of some of that volatility, because where we're investing, and there's still a low interest rate environment right now, where we're investing, we're able to create, first mortgages and mezz debt and participate in an area in real estate where we think we can get these equity-like yields that I mentioned. The middle market, I mean, think about how there's been migration to places that are less dense, away from some of the gateway cities, at least for now. And that thesis really plays well for the middle market. And when we talk about middle market, we mean places like, you know, Salt Lake City, Baltimore. You know, we have invested in the state of Connecticut. We, you know, if we look at our portfolio, we have, we're not really focused on the 24-hour cities, which we think will recover, but that's just not the basis's focus. But middle market opportunities are going to be, you know, significant. And we talked about the COVID disruption. So each of our strategies holds up well. The other thing to think about is even in an inflationary environment, which people are sort of worried about, we have, our mezz and preferred equity investments are high teens coupons that typically, you know, stay that way, even in inflation, and they don't move with inflationary. So they will outpace inflation. And then when you think about our senior mortgages, they are linked to LIBOR or SOFR. So if as those rates go up, so will our interest rates or our coupons as well. So we think that it's also a good hedge against inflation. So let's go to the next slide. Fundraising. Well, you know, we're on pace. We gave ourselves a year only because we just don't know with the uncertainty of, you know, what could happen. And we just did, we wanted to be, you know, conservative. We think that we will be done sooner. Our hard cap is $750 million. We're actually ahead of this plan of, you know, the first close based on the, if we were just raising $550 million. So we're on pace, which I'm very, you know, excited about. I'll turn it back over to Rich.
Thanks, Tammy. So I mentioned earlier about the institutional quality credit process, and this slide shows in more detail the scope of that process. This goes back, we set this process up when we launched BASIS more than 12 years ago. And this consistent approach to credit has resulted in zero credit losses since inception. Again, some takeaways, I said institutional quality, diligent. The senior management team is involved in every aspect of the process. It's thorough, it's disciplined, and it covers every aspect, beginning with the sourcing of investments, underwriting, the legal process, asset management, all the way through the exit. Thank you. Tammy, back to you.
Next slide.
Lisa?
Okay, we've talked about the philosophy, and I want to be, you know, in the interest of time, again, current cash flow and equity-like yields is the focus, and we are, you know, investing with best-in-class experienced owners across the country and most of this, you know, other these other items we've mentioned. Let's go to the next slide. Strong relative value. If you look at how we stack up against some of the comparative investments, you know, our realized returns outpace them, and then our both fund one and fund one projected return is over 18, actually over 16%, and our target return, you know, as well is outpacing some of these. So we just always like to benchmark ourselves against a few of these indices. Let's go to the next slide. And finally, why invest with us? Well, we think that our diversified strategy, which we talked about, is going to be a huge risk mitigant for your portfolios and will provide defensive positioning. Our team is experienced. We've worked together for, you know, for over 20 years and through multiple cycles. We have a proven track record of success. We delivered as promised in Fund One. Our process is focused and consistent. Our pipeline is over $1 billion today. And so we believe that, you know, we're finding, you know, those best in class operators and owners and the right investments. And then we think that the market opportunity is compelling, particularly today, to get equity like yields, but have the downside protection of credit. So I think those are our prepared remarks. We tried to make sure we stayed respectful of the 20 minutes. And we're happy to answer any questions or talk about anything that or anything you guys would like to talk about this morning.
Could you, excuse me, give us a list of where the centers of the debts, your investments are by, you know, areas of the country? And also, could you just take that forward to Fund Two to show us where you intend to be involved in Fund Two in what areas of the country? So I assume that this is a countrywide investment.
It absolutely platform. Is. We're a national platform. I'm going to let Kun Lee answer on the markets, and then I'll, Kun Lee, if you don't mind, you want to just talk about our top, 25 markets that we've been focusing in. And we won't go through all 25, but just give them a sense. And we can provide a list as well.
Yeah, we as Tammy noted, we are nationally focused. And in terms of, our Fund One investment, it's been kind of like all across the country, ranging from Texas to California, we've done transactions in Connecticut, in the Boston area. We have some in Virginia, just outside of DC.
If you could just send us where they are, the schedule, I think that would be fine.
Yeah, that's
fine. Yeah, we can follow up with a schedule to you, but we're very proactive in our approach to market. You know, again, very middle market focused. You know, we look for market where there's strong employment growth, strong demand drivers, you know, very analytical in terms of proactively listing out market that we're interested in and then doing research ahead of time, not just waiting for when transaction comes to our desk to say, okay, we want to go to this market. You know, we try to shy away from the gateway market, you know, because of competitions, too much competition in the gateway market. We also not just looking to generate the returns that we're targeting, but as Rich said earlier on, making sure we're protective of the downside. So we look for market where we can have a good diversification, be able to generate the return, and also not chasing after yield at the detriment of not staying disciplined. But we can send you a list.
If I may, I just wanted to add, just to put a little bit of refinement on the answer, we're going to send you the list, but we are focused on where migration is going. And that's the analysis we do. Where are people moving, right? Where, and so, and in addition to employment growth and population growth, where are they moving? So we, every quarter, we sit down as a team and we look across the United States and we find those markets. And it could be markets like Salt Lake City or Boise, Idaho, where the demand generators support that. So you'll see, so the markets that we're going to send to you, you know, our job is to be ahead of the curve and to find those markets. So we're not just going to send you markets that just stay there for 3 years. We're constantly looking, and like other, unlike other debt platforms, we are actually going to those markets, and now we'll be able to get back on planes. Thanks God for vaccinations, to actually go there. We've been still doing it by meeting with people. But the market thing is a great question because it is literally where we think we thrive, because we're finding those markets by looking at where people are moving, where are the opportunities for housing, and you know, looking at governments, are they healthy, are they not, are they supportive of real estate? And so that's the analysis that we're doing. So we'll send you the list that we have now, but just understand that it gets updated quarterly.
Right.
I have a question, if I may. Not sure who to address it to, but ultimately, you know, my question is more on real estate in general. You know, we have several clients that look at real estate, obviously on the residential side, and the market is sizzling, as you all know. I mean, I've heard some stories of, you know, bidding wars and you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars over asking price offers, and, you know, from your thesis, the migration thesis out of some of the major cities and whatnot. Do you guys and gals see a boom to bust? Do you see, how are you being mindful of that? Are you concerned at all about real estate appreciation and valuation? And I've heard a lot of funny things happening in the real estate market with appraisals and so on and so forth. So what do you folks see in that regard?
So I think it really depends on the kind of multifamily that you're referring to. There's a lot of luxury multifamily that's trading at premiums that shock all of us. But let's just face it, there is an affordability crisis in America on housing. We don't have enough housing, workforce housing. So that's our focus. And that place in sort of the spectrum of multifamily, which again, Derek, is huge, is a place where we think we will thrive because there is not an oversupply. You know, real estate is about relationships and supply and demand when you just boil it down. And there is an undersupply of the workforce housing that we're focused on. And also, if it is overheated, well, guess what? That's even a stronger thesis for our strategy because we're at a more protective place in the capital stack. So the equity is what's going to get involved, you know, hit first if things are done not the right way. But our place in the capital stack will have cushion because we're doing either senior debt or even preferred equity, which will still be ahead of equity. So we are mindful of cap rates. We are watching where valuations don't make sense. We do not rely on appraisals. Basis does our own valuations. And so we, and I can say that of the entire portfolio in Fund One, just to show you how conservative we are, We have one deal in the direct portfolio that is $2.5 million that's in default right now. $2.5 million. And it was 70% occupied. Now it's 100 and it's also in Brooklyn. So we're very comfortable that we're going to get our value, our money back. But I believe that speaks to our conservative underwriting and practice. And, you know, we were born in the great financial crisis and we saw values go straight way up. And this recovery has been long in the tooth. And so now I think, I do think that this will, there'll be normalization that'll come back. People are just frantically trying to put capital out, but I don't see that as happening over the long term, but you have to be cautious.
A couple of things to add to that, Derek. Because we're very multi-strategy focused, we remain disciplined. And also having a focus in the middle market also help avoid all the noise that you hear, right? Because we don't have to make a deal in any particular market. We don't have to do transaction in any particular strategy if we think the market environment it's not suited. So in addition to everything Tammy said, being able to be nimble across strategies really help us to stay disciplined, you know, not just doing deals because we have to do it in that area or look for that investment type to do it. So that all of that coupled with the internal analysis that we do, we have dedicated underwriter for the team that all they do is, you know, evaluate and, you know, we do a credit memo summary for every investment that investment credit committee have to approve of. So we stay very disciplined. That's the reason that for Fund 1, you know, we only have one investment that has default, as Tammy said, and it's very little, and we expect to recover that even.
I just have one more question, and then obviously if the trustees have any questions. You mentioned distressed segment of the portfolio. What percentage of the portfolio do you have allocated to distressed, or will you have allocated to distressed?
About 25% is what we're targeting for distress. And just to be clear, when we say distress, we're not talking about investment that are in trouble, that are really bad investment, you know, because when you hear that word, what we really mean is situational distress. We're looking for, because of COVID, many investors and, you know, lenders have had, you know, trouble asset that they've been sitting on that we expect some of those to be diverse off as the market recovers. So we want to be ready and prepared to take advantage of those. You know, we kind of saw similar opportunities during the great financial crisis. But the key point is, although we're allocating 25%, we also want to stay nimble, right? So if the opportunities are in there for our liking,
Kunle, it's not 25%. I'm sorry. I pulled up our allocation. I don't mean to correct you. It's 17%.
17%. I apologize. 17%.
And then 9% of the investment. I was like, what did we change our allocation?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's I think you meant bridge is 25%. So I apologize. I don't like to correct my team members, but I think it's important. In allocations, we don't think there's going to be droves of distressed debt. That's why it's 9% of our overall investment and 17% of our equity. But we do think there's going to be situational distress, right? And so there will be, you know, situations where, as Derek said, there's a lot of stuff going on. Partners may need to get out of deals. And so we're seeing a lot of recaps. We're not going for the empty building that we want to take over. That's not what we call distress. We call it situational distress. The other place is that there are 10,000 people that are turning 65 every day for the next 10 years. So there's going to be a lot of ownership transfer. And so that's the distress we're talking about, not just COVID, but COVID certainly helps that that point. But we didn't want to go crazy with it. We have a track record in distressed debt. I mean, been doing it for my career. And obviously in the last run up that there wasn't a ton of distressed debt to do other than in the GFC when we started, we did a lot of that. But I think, you know, our thoughtful approach on allocation is important. So just wanted to.
No. Thank you, Tammy. I don't know. Thank you for correcting that. For sure.
Trustees have questions? I just have one last question then, and then thank you for your time. Just what is the term and cost structure of your Fund 2?
Very consistent with Fund 1. In fact, the structure is exactly the same. I don't know, Rich, if you want to say We have
the term is 8 years past the final closing, and the fees are 1.5% on invested capital during the commitment period, 1.5% on committed capital after the commitment period.
And the same waterfall, but this really the same. We just basically this is like a follow. This is a follow on fund.
You went through that a little quickly, Rich. Can you just rephrase that?
For sure. It's the same structure, fee structure as fund one. So and term. So the term is 8 years past the final closing, which we anticipate to be later this year. Fees 1.5% on committed capital during the commitment period. 1.5% on invested capital after the commitment period, and the same waterfall as fund one. 80-20 split at the on the carry.
Yeah, very, very, it is the same as fund one. So we didn't see any reason to make any changes, dramatic changes to that.
Hi, this is Susan. I just have a question. What do you think or what do you consider to be the biggest risks that you face over the next 3 years?
Well, I would say that's a great question. I would say that, in an uncertain market like a pandemic, right, none of us know, and I'll focus on real estate, exactly what's going to happen by way of example with office, right? There's a transformation of office that's happening. So, we do have an allocation to office. So we're very cautious about that as well. I think that cybersecurity is a big risk for platforms across the nation. And so we are, making sure that we have a robust cybersecurity response and protection. So I think that would be number one. And I think all of us should consider that. I think that, firms that are not focused on, understanding what they need to do from an ESG perspective. That's why we have this ESG effort. It's about caring about your planet, right? So real estate is a generator of 40% of carbon emissions through buildings. So, firms like ours, have to do our part to make sure that we're forcing that down and we're asking our partners and borrowers to care about that. So I see that as a risk. And so we are putting together ways to mitigate that risk by ensuring that, we're asking our partners to use LED lighting by way of example, use, ways to make sure that water usage and utilization is effective to help us all. And so, from a real estate market perspective, inflation is a risk, right? And so we just told you that we have our strategies, a hedge against inflation because of the high coupons that we believe will outpace inflation. And the fact that our, indices, LIBOR, where some of our deals are priced, are linked to those indices. So inflation is a risk. And then frankly, I think an affordability crisis and a wealth gap crisis, which is why Basis is out there trying to invest with other women and minorities to create wealth. That's a huge risk to companies and platforms and as a country. So, I'm trying to give you the global things that I think about as a CEO, but also, on the real estate ground, we have to be careful about retail and making sure that we're focusing in drug and grocery anchored centers we think are good, staying away from malls. We have to, risk on hotels. Destination hotels are coming back, but some of the business hotels, not so quickly. So the risk is really trying to stay ahead of the curve and making sure that you understand what's happening in this recovery that is very different than the great financial crisis. And really trying, because we're rewriting history with respect to how, economies are responding to this and with respect to recovery. It's not going to be linear. It's going to be fragmented. And I think there'll be different geographies that'll perform better. And so the risk is making sure that we can identify those geographies, get there and underwrite consistently to protect you.
I wanted to ask a second question, and that is, forgive me, I'm not good with this button. There's a looming eviction crisis, and I'm curious what you see that having as an impact on your fund.
So it, that is also something that, you know, we monitor, you know, obviously by city, by geography. Again, that's what I meant about the uneven recovery. I think that in terms of workforce housing and the price point that we have not seen it impact our portfolio too much, because food and shelter, we're paying rents. Our deals, and we have 84% of our, one of our CMBS, bond investments is workforce housing. Collections are up. Where it'll affect us is not so much where collections are down. It's just that rents, there's downward pressure on rents in some cases, which is what I think, Derek, you were referring to in terms of, you know, what's going on in multifamily. But in terms of the eviction crisis, we are not investing in affordable housing, where I see a lot of that happening. In the workforce portfolio that we have, our collections are high. And so where we're investing, I don't anticipate, you know, as the recovery happens and as people get back to work, we believe that the worst of it in terms of the workforce housing component, again, I want to qualify that, is, you know, we're moving past that. Now, if we have another wave with the variants, obviously that's certainly, as I mentioned in the very beginning, that's a risk. But in terms of, you know, evictions, we, in every one of our portfolio of investments, you know, we've been mindful of that, and we haven't had that be an issue. I mean, Rich, you can speak to it legally. Evictions have not been an issue in our investments at all.
No, it hasn't. Tammy, I think it's another aspect of the ESG focus, you know, who you pick as your partners and your borrowers. I mean, we look at the track record of our partners, our borrowers, our sponsors, not only on the investment we're making, but on their portfolio. So we want to, you know, work with people who are mindful of the concerns and challenges that we see in workforce housing, and make sure they're doing what they can to help their tenants navigate through COVID the same way we're looking to help them.
That's right. And I will tell you, that's a great point. We have, you know, if anything, in the height of COVID, we're in it for 14 months. I can't believe that. In March and April of last year, yeah, you know, people were just, their collections were way down. I think our average collections in our portfolio, which speaks to the eviction point, was why I'm saying this, is over 90%, 90, which is really strong, which means people are paying rent.
Thank you.
Or any other questions?
Okay. Thank you very much for your time. And it was a great presentation. And you know, obviously we have a history with you on your Fund One, so it's nice to see all of you again.
Thank you so much.
And one, I guess, in closing, when are you anticipating closing, your second closing? We're closing. Where are you again? I'm sorry,
Rich. Why don't you? I'll let you take that. So I don't.
We're exchanging signature pages with our first close investors. So it'll happen as early as Friday, hopefully Friday.
And then second close, we're targeting
probably you know, late June, early July.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you all for spending time with us this morning. We'll send you the list of the markets. It's great to see all of you. Stay safe and have a great rest of the day.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye.
So narrative, Derek?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, obviously they've done a great job for us in Fund One. I don't know if you all want to have a dialogue about this now, or do you want to go back to your regular slated meeting? How do you want to proceed?
Well, if it could be a
really
quick dialogue,
like to see what they're where they're investing, because workforce housing is a nice name for the old tenements, but that's a risky business.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the reasons why I asked when their next closing is, you know, obviously, you would all need to vote on a follow-on investment if you'd want to do that. And then we also need to give Carolyn and her team time to review the contracts and whatnot. And, you know, we all know how real estate works as far as you know, capital call structure. It's not like, if, you know, whatever a dollar amount we have to have allocated doesn't mean it's going to need to be readily available to invest all of it on day one. So it gives us a little bit of a runway. But, you know, certainly they've done a great job for us. I personally like this segment of the market. I like the fact that they're basically lending on real estate. So they're not necessarily going out and buying real estate assets. They're lenders to real estate investors, which is nice. It's a different, so it's a kind of a hybrid process where it's not just going out and buying real estate. So I really do like the area of the market they're in. I like their strategy. They've done very well with us for Fund One. So, you know, however, we do have a little bit of time. So if one of the trustees asked for the list, we, you know, certainly can wait for the list. If you want to wait till the end of the meeting, I don't, I'm at your leisure. So whatever you folks think is the right way to go, I'm more than happy to oblige.
I'd like to digest more.
Derek, can I ask you a question?
Ben Mark.
Derek, go ahead.
Their financing was 1.5% on committed capital, 1.5% on invested capital.
Yes.
And then the waterfall is 80-20. So the committed, whatever we vote to approve, we're paying, even if they're not using the money at that time, we're paying a percentage on it. And the waterfall is we get 80% of it, they get 20%.
Correct. You got it right, Mark. Exactly right.
Okay. So is the we commit $5 million or whatever. They have $1 million invested. So we're still paying 1.5% of $5 million, no matter what.
Correct.
Okay.
And where would we be pulling this money from?
More than likely, it would come from an equity. You know, probably domestic. We're due for a rebalance soon anyway. You know, a lot of our equity investments have done very well. So it'd probably come from equity, Kathy.
And I meant to ask them, what's their minimum?
Good question. We did not ask that. I can certainly follow up with them.
Yeah, I meant to ask that.
I think our initial investment with them was $5 million.
I'd like to ask a legal question. Carolyn, correct me if I'm wrong, but both funds established policies, formal policies, code of ethics, code of conduct, and bylaws. I believe that in either both those policies, or I know it's in at least one, there was an insistence that any direction of SURF assets to an investment opportunity be the byproduct of competitive process. Now, I understand this company is already with us. We're engaged with them. From a legal standpoint, is this the type of thing that it's a different fund? Some other company can come in and say, well, we could do the same thing that you want them to do, and we could do it for a better price than they're offering you. Do we still have to hold to competitive process, even if we're already engaged with the company, if they're going into a different product? And I mean, is this a highly unique thing they're doing that nobody else does it? Or if we bid a, because again, those policies were established because of some past situations that were contentious on both boards to stop that from happening. And to let the, I just took an oath a couple of minutes ago with Mark and saying we're going to uphold the process of the fund in the best interest. And I'm saying, and again, these companies look good. I'm not doing anything to try to cast aspersions on them, not at all. It's just a question that's in my mind is, if this warrants a company that we're already engaged in to have the inside track on any other investments that are coming up, to the exclusion of somebody, another company that might do it in a better, do as well as them and charge lower rates. I don't know. From a legal standpoint, what's your attitude on that?
So I would love to look at this more closely, but the code of conduct, which I don't have in front of me, does require when we select a manager that we interview three managers.
I got the code.
You have it in front of you, Mario?
I wanted to add to
what part of the code of conduct is that?
I really should have it in front of me. It's sort of in the middle to the back. Is there a table of contents? I can't
remember. Yeah, there's a table of contents on the page.
Selection of managers section.
Can I just ask a question? I know that that would apply if we were doing a new and or different investment, but we're already with this company and we're only doing the same thing.
Well, that's my question. That's my question.
So yeah, I need to look at that question. But maybe Mariel could.
Page 22 is money manager selection and monitoring of money managers.